What I'd like to do now is introduce our speaker for today. And we are very fortunate to have a figure who is very well known to this audience. Really a legend in Philadelphia baseball. 16-year major league career, 12 of those 16 years right here in Philly as the real anchor and cornerstone as the shortstop of the Philadelphia Phillies. Nearly 2,200 hits in his 16-year career, played in 5 All-Star games, and a key force on the 1980 Philadelphia Phillies team. Now he's turned into expert commentator and analyst at MLB Network, and we get a chance to listen to his wonderful insights about the game from all of his years of playing, managing, and coaching. So I'd like to welcome Larry Bowa. The format for today's talk is a dialogue between Larry and Barry Bloom. Barry is the national columnist for MLB.com. You might have heard Barry earlier this morning moderating a panel. Barry is actually the perfect person to take on this task, as he's actually authored 2 books with Larry Bowa. So that's what we're very grateful to have, Larry and Barry, and we're going to be going over to the chairs over there, having a dialogue and conversation about baseball, and then we'll open it up to questions at the end. Thank you.
Just a little background here on how I became involved with writing Larry's first book. He was named manager of the Pirates in 1987, and I had had a tumultuous relationship with the general manager, Jack McKean, and one of the previous managers, Dick Williams, covering the Pirates in 84, 85, and 86. For the City Tribune, the afternoon paper. So McKean invites me on a trip down to Puerto Rico, scouting-wise, and he goes, "Look, I want you to come down. I'm going to invite Larry. I just don't want you to have the relationship with this guy that you had with Dick Williams. I can't hand that. So I want to have you can come down here have me in and have a good time." Now, my background with Larry was, for all you guys who have been around, the 1980s, 70s Phillies teams were a pretty cantankerous bunch of guys to deal with. And when you go to Larry, my whole relationship with him was, I'd walk up to him after a game, he'd be sitting over a plate of food on a paper plate, I'd ask him a question, he'd look up at me like I was an alien. So we go down, have a great time in Puerto Rico. Right before spring training, I get a telephone call from Larry. And he says, this publishing company in Chicago wants to write a book about my first year managing the Padres, the diary of my first year managing the Padres. And this is what he says to me, if you recall the conversation. He says, I'm a bleep hole, and I need a bleep hole to work with me on this, because I'm a tank in the bleep. And then he says, I asked around, and I was told, you're just that bleep hole. So we spent the year together, and the first book was named Bleep. Right, and by March of 1988, he's in trouble already managing the Pirates, and by May, he's dismissed, as we call it at MLB.com. And I'm the one who calls him in his hotel room at 4:30 in the morning to tell him that he's probably gone, and the club president, Tom Chomsky, had yet to even do it. This becomes the chapter to the new book. He gets hired in Philadelphia, and he says, you know, people in Philly can't find bleep, they want to read it. So he voted on the property and reconstituted it, and we called it, I still hate to lose. And the first half of it is bleep, second half of it is all this stuff. And for his credit, this was 2004, he actually lasted the whole season before he got fired the second time. So I don't know if you remember, I told you, if we ever write a third book, the name of it's going to be, I Still Hate to Lose My Job.
The bottom line on all this is that I have two jobs and various them two books, I got fired really fast. Very done.
Papers over here.
Yeah. So, we had a great relationship. I mean, Barry would be the only guy that would come in after a game, especially in San Diego. You know, they didn't have a lot of beat writers. And he'd be asking me all these strategy questions and everything. And there was one particular night, I had made a pitching change, and it didn't work. You know, I brought in the lefty to face the lefty. Of course, Barry, he's up on everything. He goes, well, why'd you do that? I said, you know, I thought that was the right move at that time. Obviously, the guy got a base hit and he ended up losing. I said, you know, Barry, it's really easy for you to come in here and ask me that question. That's second guessing. I said, so from now on, before I do anything, I'm going to call the press box and you tell me what to do. And from then on, you know, Barry sort of eased off a little bit. He was the only guy that really presented tough questions for me. But it was a good experience in San Diego. I had a very young team. To make a long story short, the guy that I wanted as my shortstop was a guy by the name of Robbie Alomar. And he had a tremendous spring. We had a very young team, and we weren't going to do anything. We weren't going to win anything. And so he tore up spring training, so we're having our meeting. And Sandy Alomar, who was Robbie's dad, was one of my coaches. So we're sitting down, and says, okay, let's go with Jackson. Let's go over the roster. And I said, whatever you do, I said, hey, I'm fine with that. I said, I want Alomar. I want to take Alomar. I said, you're not getting Alomar. I said, you can't give me. This guy just tore up spring training. I said, he knows what he's doing out there. He knows how to play. He plays short. He plays second. He swings the bat good. I said, let's get these young kids in here and play it. He goes, no, you're not getting Alomar. So anyway, we moved on. Jack ended up really basically picking the team up my first year as a manager, which I have no problem with. You know, a lot of GM do that now. The manager gets the team, you do the best you can. Well, the bottom line of this, one after night, did get fired. About 5 or 6 days later, Alomar's in San Diego playing shortstop. So I looked at Jack, and at the end, I still tell Jack, I could take Alomar in spring training. He just shook his head to get over it. That was one of the stories that with Jack and I continuously go over and over. And to this day, he will never tell me why I didn't take Alomar that day.
Yeah, because they just told him that he was trying to play out for Matt.
Oh, yeah. No,
because they didn't want to bring him up to give him more arbitration time
right. In
the major league.
Because when you're managing, you don't worry about arbitration.
Right.
You want your best young players. And we were a young team. And I had John Truck on that team. I had Robbie. I had Benito Santiago. You know, it was a lot of young team. There was a good player, but they weren't ready to win and compete. You know, and I personally said, hey, let's go call young kids and see what happens.
There's two stats from your playing career. You batted 260 over the course of 16 seasons.
Right.
But the one that always jumped out in my mind, and I was looking at it up again yesterday, is that you had a 90 fielding percentage at a shortstop, which, you know, taking it for all you guys out there, that means 98% of the time a ball came to Boa in some shape or form, he made the play. And for a long time, I think you were that was the top of the National League history, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Ozzie.
No, actually, Ozzie's below you. Rizcal is above you.
Right.
But if you look at the realm of it, Barry Larkin, Ozzie, Cal Ripken, Jeter is 28, and he's 8. This is how good a shortstop this guy was in the major league when he played ball.
Well, the thing about that, Barry, is I took a lot of pride in that because when I signed, I didn't get drafted. That was the first year of the draft, I wasn't drafted. I didn't make my high school baseball team. I got cut every year. And so I was playing in the summer league, and the junior college coach came out in Sacramento and said, hey, would you like to come out for my team? And I said, I can't even make the high school team. How am I going to play for you? And he said, believe me, and he said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to play. So I went out and I played, and you know, I ended up making all conference at junior college and for 2 years. And then a guy by the name of Eddie Bachman, who was a great scout, he's got a signing. And He gave me a check for $2,000 for signs. I spent that on the car back in the day. But the bottom line was, he said, you know what? I don't know how far you're going to get. He says, but I do think you'd be a good baseball guy. Even if you get to Double-A or Triple-A, yeah, that'd be great. And the rap on me was, good field, he could throw, he could run, but he can't hit. And he was probably right on at that time. I mean, I wasn't very good hitter. And then, you know, I ended up playing A, Double-A, Triple-A in Philadelphia. And then in 1970, Phillies were going through a rebuilding stage, and they brought me up to play. I was terrible the first half. I remember Frank Lucchesi was our manager, and there was all kinds of rumors in the paper that Eric Bosa was going down, he's not even getting 200. In fact, Ralph Bernstein wrote an article. He's no longer with us, but Ralph, he wrote an article a year ago. We had trouble hitting in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. That's a little bit more serious. I used to read all these articles, you know, and it sort of motivated me. And the thing that I'm the most proud of is hitting 2,000 hits in the big leagues. I mean, everyone said that I couldn't hit. It's something that I worked hard at. And of course, the ultimate is winning the World Series in 1980.
Well, there are two things from that. You know, you should tell them the story. I think it's in the book where Bachman comes up to Sacramento.
Yeah, that's
the same in the doubleheader.
Yeah.
And he gets thrown out of
the public. Judy Collins gave Paul Owens, who's the general manager, and Eddie says, I got a kid here. I think he could help be an organization guy. And Paul says, we'll go out and scout him and send me your report back. So we're playing doubleheader at Sacramento Junior College, and we played every Saturday doubleheaders. So the first game, Eddie's there, and I had met Eddie before. You know, he'd been watching me. You know, I came up and said, hi. I said, how's it going? He said, have a good day today. I said, okay. So the first game of the doubleheader, I think I got kicked out in the third inning. And the second game, I think I got kicked out either in the first or second inning. So Paul Owens called him. He says, now go to. He says, I have no idea. He says, I didn't get to see the play. So that's how that sort of unfolded.
And then the second thing was that he was, even though he downplays it, because, you know, the Phillies were building at the time, but they had another guy coming up in the minor league system who had been paid as a shortstop, a guy named Michael Jack Schmidt.
Yep.
And Larry, they had to move him over to third base because Larry started to play so well as a shortstop.
Well, and to go into that story a little bit, when Mike first signed, you know, when you first signed your number one pick, they let you come to the big leagues and work out. And, you know, I always played with a chip on my shoulder. I was small. Nobody wanted me, and, you know, and so I'm taking ground balls, and I see, you know, out of the corner of my eye, I see somebody standing there, getting ready to take ground balls, and it was Mike, and he said, do you mind if I take some ground balls? I said, not bad. So, you know, we were alternating, and he'd tell you the story. After about, I don't know, 5 minutes or 6 minutes, I'm taking ground, and she's taking ground, and I said, you know, it'd be a good idea if you take some third. I said, because I don't think you're going to play here. I plan on playing here. He was right as that. I tell him, number one pick is hitting the balls 900 feet and basically a Hall of Fame player. And he looked at me like, yeah, right. They eventually did move him to third. Thank God for that. I'd have been out of the job a long time ago. So he started getting bigger and everything, and they dug me back to third baseman. So I was very fortunate to play with him during the good times in Philly, him and Steve Carlton and Pete Rose, to play with three guys that, I know Pete's not in the Hall of Fame, but they are Hall of Fame players, and it was a lot of fun, and the city got wild when we won in 1980. That was the ultimate, you know, riding down Broad Street, winning World Series, because this team has been such a bad team for so long. And from about 1975 through the early 80s, we started getting respectability. And, you know, that's something, you know, people say, well, what about your best game offensively? What about your best game defensively? I said, there's only one thing that stands out, that's winning World Series. That, to me, is the ultimate. And when I see guys now that this trade deadline has passed, and you see guys that are on the fourth place team or fifth place team, I don't know if I want to go to that team. You know, they got to go to their family. I still, to this day, can't understand why a guy would want to go to a team that has a chance to win a World Series. Because to me, that's the ultimate. You can make all the money in the world. You can be happy in a certain town. But to me, chasing that ring is the ultimate. And that's something that you can always hang your hat on. And to this day, as many players as I've played with, you have these, you know, you make these relationships, but there is a special bond on a team that wins a World Series. Whether it be going to card shows or alumni games, or that bond stays with you forever, and it's something that you never forget.
I want to touch a little bit on your managerial career, too, because looking at the stats, your lifetime record is something like 418 and 435, and most of the under 500 came with your first season.
San Diego, yeah.
Because they were 32 games under 500, right. 65 and 97 in the first year,
right.
With Tony Gwynn batting 370 and winning the batting title.
Right.
So that's a strange day. But the year opens up where he's already on the brink, and it's like, okay, they're 0-3, and we're at Candlestick Park. And I come in there with a couple other writers, and I go, wow, how'd that go? And I already knew what kind of year it was going to be, because he goes, we're 0-3 horse bleep. The manager's horse bleep, the coach's horse bleep, the player's horse bleep, we're horse bleep, 0-3 horse bleep. And that's, and then 2 weeks later, or a week later, you're in LA. They lose a game. They're like 2-10 at this point. He comes in, clears the spread out in the clubhouse. There's milk containers, all kinds of stuff flying all over the place. And he goes, there's not 10 players in here who know how to play this game. And he slams himself into the office. So Tony, you know, was like the nicest kid in the world at that point. He goes sheepishly into the office and he says, Larry, you know, I think I'd like to think that I'm 1 of those 10. And Larry looks at him and goes, Tony, you're 1 through 10. So, talk a little bit before we get to questions and answers. Talk about managing. You know, could you manage again?
Yeah, I mean, there's no. I mean, I came to Philadelphia in 2001. It was a terrible team. I mean, Terry Francona was managing here, and he had no players. Trust me, they lost 100 games in '98. And so anyway, he hired me in 2001, and you know, he said, you got to change the culture at the clubhouse. And the first thing I said, how about changing the players? Anyway, you know, it was pretty good for me because I managed for 4 years here, and we were over 500 every year. You know, when you get manager of the year, it's not you, it's the players, and I did get manager of the year, I think, in 2001 or two.
Well, your team, well, you only had one team that was under 500.
Yeah, there
was one game under 500.
There was one game under 500. All the other games were over 500. So we did change the culture of this ball club. And then Charlie came in, and of course, the rest is history. They started spending some money, and they started winning some ball games. But it was good to take a team that you knew you had a chance. I mean, I knew we weren't going to win with those Philly teams, but I knew we could be respectable. And Eddie and Dave Montgomery and Bill Cobb at the time, Dallas Green, all the ones. You know, they gave me some players that, you know, they weren't great players, but they were good players. And it was fun to manage a team like that where you felt every time you put the uniform on, you had a chance to win. You know, and nothing against when I was in San Diego, because I knew Jeff McKinney was going to be get beat up this year. We don't have anything with going with kids. And it's easy to say, yeah, okay, because hindsight being 2020, I managed my first year in Las Vegas and we won the championship. And so Jack comes to me and says, you know, I should come and make you manager. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if I'm ready, but I didn't tell Jack. Well, oh, great. But hindsight being 2020, the comment I should have made was, you know, Jack, I'm not ready for this. I'd like to manage a couple more years in the minor league. But anytime anybody comes up to me and says, hey, I'm going to give you a big league team to manage, you're going to say, yeah. But looking back on it, it would have been better if I had stayed there in the minor leagues a couple more years, just through the experience and going through the ups and downs of a season. You know, as it turned out, it was okay. I mean, I did all right. But I got to, you know, during my whole career, not only as a player, but I got to coach for Joe Torre, I got to coach for Lou Piniella. You know, when you're talking about teams in New York, Los Angeles, in Chicago, I coached there. It was a good experience for me. I got to get on Lou Piniella, who's probably tempers a lot different than Joe Torre. And I got to be around Joe Torre. I think he's one of the best managers I've ever been around. He has coach's coach. He has a demeanor about him that you could walk in that clubhouse, and if you lost 20 in a row or 120 in a row, he has the same personality. And he's got that instant credibility when he walks into a room that he gets everybody's attention. And he did a great job in L.A. because we weren't really that good. And we came two games both years to get into a World Series. We won the playoffs. We beat St. Louis 1 year, we beat Chicago 1 year, and we lost to Philly. But we were one or two players short. But Joe did a tremendous job there. But it was good being around those guys because you could see why they were successful.
Maybe we could make a little news here. My understanding is that if Charlie steps down at the end of the season and Rhino becomes the manager, that you could wind up being the bench coach with Rhino. Is there any
Well, I hope they don't say that about that. That Rhino's one of my better friends. And him and I talk a lot. And, you know, Rhino's not taking anything for granted here. You know, he's a company guy. And, you know, he loves Charlie. And he said, if I can be third base coach here for the next 3 years, I have no problem with it. But, we talked before. And I don't know what's going to happen with Rhino. He's a good baseball guy. And Charlie's done a tremendous job in Philadelphia. This year it hasn't gone the way they would have liked it. This game's a funny game. If you follow what's happened, I'll give you an example. Last year, Washington. Here's a team that was hitting on all cylinders. They got a kid by the name of Strasburg. They shut him down. And I was watching this kid at the MLB Network, and one of the analysts there. And I'm watching his stuff in late August, and it is electric. I mean, there's no decrease in velocity. He's breaking balls, throwing strikes. I mean, he's dominating hitters. And I understand the way the game is now. You got to be careful of innings. But I thought there was a way, maybe skip a start, maybe only have to go five innings some game. Because I really believe in my heart that if he had pitched the rest of the way, I'm not saying they won the World Series, that he got to the World Series, but there's some general managers now that think because you're young, you're going to get there in the next 2, 3, 4. It doesn't work that way. And you see now what's happening to Washington. They have to do an unbelievable job to get maybe a smell of these playoffs. But some of these general managers are coming in now think, oh, we're going to be good. We got all these young guys. They're going to get better. And if you're around baseball a long time, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. And you know, we talk about baseball guys. I don't know if you guys are all fans. Don't make the baseball guys mad at you. If you get a baseball guy mad at you, they will punish you. And I just read what Calvin said a couple days ago about, get me out of here, I came to win. And I know he probably didn't mean it that way, but it didn't come out too good. So I'm watching last night, and they let him go. They did not like that article, believe me. He gave up 2 runs in the ninth inning. The Phillies lost the ball game 2-1. So don't mess with the baseball guys. They will get even with you at one time or another.
All right, so I'm going to take that as a yes. I'd like to open it up to a few questions.
Sure. Well, in all fairness, I think Theo's doing a great job.
The question
was, what will it take? He's a Cardinal fan, right. And he wants to know what it's going to take for the Cubs to win a World Series. we came close to 84. We won the first 2 games, then we go out to San Diego and got swept.
Not that close.
No, I'm low. But Barry has something to do with that today. I don't know. But I think Theo's got a good plan. He's got some young kids there. It's not that easy to put together a team. You got to have some luck. You got to be good. You got to get breaks. I'm not going to say they're going to win in the next year or two, but I think they're going to be a very respectable team. This game is a funny game. You saw your team in Cardinals. They were cruising along. Then they do 7 games in a row. And who would have thought that? And not only did they do 7 games in a row, they didn't even hit. And I'm watching them a week ago, and I'm saying on the air, this is how dumb I am. I'm saying, this might be the best hitting team I've ever seen. They drive in, run for 2 outs. They stay in the middle of the field. They got guys that know what they're doing to play. Then for 7 games, I'm going, why did I say that? That's why baseball is such a great game. You don't know what's going to happen. I will say this. I think the Cubs are on the right track.
Anybody else? All the way in the back. Oh, you got a microphone?
Yeah.
One of the more entertaining stories I ever heard about you in San Diego was running with Storm Davis, where you ended up saying the SD in the hat doesn't stand for Storm Davis. Is that true?
Yeah, that was true. I was going to make a pitching change, and Storm had a way of pitching, and, you know, after the second time around through the lineup, they had pretty good swings at it. And, you know, so I was going to go out and make a change, and he started giving me some BS out there, and I went, hey, Storm, just give me the ball, I'm making a change. And so, you know, he said, somebody gave me the ball, and then after the game, and I told him when I was out there, I said, if you got a problem, come on in my office, and we'll talk about it. So obviously he came in, and we were going back to school. And I said, hey, before you leave that SD, it means San Diego Padre, not Storm Davis. I tell you another story, I said, this, you'll love this one. It was with Benito Santiago, the year he won Rookie of the Year. So he hits a ground ball to short, and he runs about three quarters of the way down, and then he peels off. And I'm watching this for a couple days. So he's putting his gear on, and I said, you're out of the game. He goes, what do you mean? I said, you look tired. I said, you take a seat, I'm going to put Mark Maron in. And he goes, are you serious? I said, yeah, I'm serious. I said, I don't like the way you make it. I don't like guys that don't play the game the right way. And so I said, when you're ready to play the right way, come in my office and I'll put you back in the lineup. So the first day goes by, and I'm expecting Benito to come in. You know, he's one of my best players. And he doesn't come in. So, I said, I'll play Mark Maron again. So, and Mark, nothing against Mark Maron, he was a very good back, I guess. So the second day comes, and I'm saying, he'll be here today. No Benito. So now I get a call from Jack, and he goes, what are you doing? I said, hey, Jack, I'm gonna make this an example of this kid. I said, he's got a great future. I said, I'm tired of him not running out ball. He's too easy his first year in the big league. I said, are you kidding me? He said, you gotta get him in there. I said, I told him when he's ready to play, come and talk to me. So Sandy Alomar, who was my coach, a great baseball guy, I called Sandy and I said, Sandy, has he said anything to you? Not a word. And I said, he said, you want me to talk to him? I said, no, don't talk to him. Let him get this message. So it went 3 days, and I'm getting calls from Jack. And I'm going, oh, Jesus, I got to get this kid lined up. So the fourth day, he did come in. I went, thank God. He goes, I'm ready to play. I said, are you ready to play the right way? He goes, yeah. I said, I want you to give me everything you have. And when you're tired, tell me, and I'll give you a rest. I said, no need for that. I said, you're a young kid. And the rest of the year, in fact, he won 32 games in a row. Happy that game, he won rookie of the year. He played unbelievable. And to this day, when I see Benito, he says, remember that time when you benched me? I said, yeah. I said, I almost got fired then because Jack McKinney kept calling down. He said, you better get this guy in the lineup. He's our best player. But it worked out good, and Benito was a good kid. But sometimes, you know, as a manager, when you let guys at a young age do things and nobody says anything, a lot of coaches are afraid to say things to people now. I mean, your job as a coach is to make these guys better. Not get on them. Constructive criticism. But there is a lot of players that play today, and they're good players, believe me, they're a lot of good players. They're very sensitive. And you gotta be careful how you say it, and when you say it, and where you say it. You know, if you're gonna do it, you do it in your office, one-on-one.
You had a few things with Matt Camper.
Yeah, Matt Camper, I had a little frills on my head. He turned out okay. I'm not saying that works. I'm just saying sometimes, you know, this game's not easy to play. If people think this game's easy to play, you're crazy. This is one of the hardest games to play. And sometimes, you know, you need to be, you know, you have to bring out some things to players that the easiest thing to do on a baseball field is play hard. Hitting the ball's hard, catching the ball's hard. The easiest thing to do is to play hard. And to this day, it shocks me to see guys go through the motions, running to first base, stopping at second when the ball's in the gap. There's no reason for that. There is absolutely no reason for that.
Did you identify yourself when you...
Yeah. Russ Lake from Champaign, Illinois. In regard to your trade to the Cubs. Do you still remind Ryan that he was a throw-in?
Ryan knows he was a throw-in. I talked to him. And that's a big joke with Ryan and I. You know, I said, you know, every time we go out to deer a lot, you know, and he'll say, "Are you getting a stab?" And I go, "What are you talking about? You know, all the time." He goes, "Yeah, but I was throwing." He was a great kid. You know, think about that kid. He went 1 for 32 right out of the gate. You talk about a kid that his first year in the big leagues, he goes 1 for 32 and overcame that. He's got a lot of. He's a tough kid. He's got a lot of mental toughness, and he's going to be a good manager.
And he was the guy who jumped Durden's glove into the Gatorade. Yeah, the error that went from his leg. Right?
Yeah, it cost us that playoff in '84.
Thank you. Dennis Corbin from Deal. Larry, I'm very impressed with the fact that you never made your high school team, and you went on to become a Major League Baseball player. You're very honest. When Robinson's Cano came up, you would be on him all the time because he wasn't hustling, running to first base. Now he's become a big star. What do you think about Robinson Cano?
Yeah, he is a big star. In fact, I continue to text him when he got his new agent. I said, "Don't forget that I gave him my address with a check to send him." The story about Robinson Cano, Joe Torre, when I went over there, he says, "You're in charge of the infield." He says, "I want you to take care of Robinson Cano." He said, "He's got all the talent in the world." He said, "He's a little lazy, doesn't really like to work." And he said, "But he's one of these guys that come along every 20 years. And so the very first day I got there, I called him during the winter when I got the job. And I said, "Robbie," I said, "when we get to spring training, we're going to work every day." He goes, "Oh, good, I need to do that." So we get to spring training, and the very first day, I said, "Robbie, 3:30 in the morning, we're going on the half field every day that we are home." Now, when we go on the road for spring training, you know, less days of a certain time, but every home game, 8:30. He goes, no problem. So the first 3 or 4 days, 8:30, boom, he's right there. We're working. So the fourth or fifth day, I'm out there with the balls, and it's 8:30, and no Robbie. And so I said, "Yeah, I'm going to give a little slack, maybe this is not big." So I waited 5 minutes, and 10 minutes, and it was 8:45, and I said, "Forget it, I got the balls." And as I'm going in, he's coming out, he goes, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, we're done." I said 8:30 every morning. And I said, "If there's traffic or whatever, you'll respect." I said, "That's not going to get it." And he goes, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yeah, I'm serious." He said, "Well, I've been here the first three." I said, "That's not the program. The program is every day when we're at home, we're working. And if you don't want to do that, then I'm not going to waste my time. I know nothing in this thing. I'm a third base coach. If you want to go out there and play and practice once every 5 days, then go ahead and do it." I said, "If you want to do it the right way, then we're going to do it the right way." And then from that day on, he came out every day at 8:30, and in fact, he got so the very first year, every time we came off a road trip from the West Coast, the Yankees had a day off the next day. He had me coming out on the day off to hit him ground ball. And that's how, and to this day, you know, I don't know what his work ethic is. I've talked to some people, he still takes the ground balls. But this guy's a tremendous athlete. And sometimes these guys need a little guidance. You know, everything's been easy to them in the minor league. They've never had to work. You got to work in this game. You have to stay on top of things. And just like, you know, how many times you see in spring training, if anybody goes, I'm sure a lot of people go to spring training, they do PFP every single day. Every single day, PFP. And then once the season starts, nobody does it. I mean, are you kidding me? You can't do that once a week or twice a week, PFP on your field. And sometimes that's the coach's fault and the manager's. This is the program. This is what we're going to do. And I believe baseball players will do what you tell them to do. If they're going to test you, and they're going to see how far they can take you, and unless you're a coach that wants to be coaching, if you got a coach, you can't be afraid of a guy making $20 million because you're a coach. If you see some things and it's your area, and it's my area, and I'm an infield coach, and I see some things that I don't like or he's not doing the right way, I'm going to tell him. And that's how I've always been. And at times, guys have gotten mad at me, but when I leave and when I see them again, they all thank me for that. So that's how I always have done it, and you know, that's why it shocks me sometimes to see coaches just And I know they like their jobs and they don't want to step on anybody's toes. But your bottom line, if you're a coach, you've got to make people better. And that's the bottom line.
Yeah, I can see you, JC is your agent. And you look at JC.
That might be a bad day.
Dixie Tarangio, Boston. Larry, you weren't known as a hitter, but during your career, was there a really good pitcher that you had very good fortune off of? And on the other hand, was there a pitcher that this crowd might not think was that good that you could not buy a hit off of? And as a fielder, was there a guy coming up to bat which you said in the back of your mind, unless there's a one hopper to me and I cleanly throw it over first as fast as I can, I'm not going to get it?
No, I never had that, I'm not going to get it. But there was always a hitter up there that I said, don't square this ball up because I know it's going to be hit very hard. And that was a world momentum, and it was towards the end of his career. He hits the hardest ground balls that I've ever seen in my life. And then always that second hop had that top spin on it. I'm going, oh my God. As far as the pitcher, and I'll tell you this story, because it sort of relates back to my very first professional game, not the big league, but Spartanburg, South Carolina. Bob Wilman was manager, and we were playing Greenville, who was the Mets. And so I'm all beat up. I'd never been away from California, and I went to spring training, and I made this team. So I get up. One thing I can do is I put the ball in play. I just strike out a lot. At that time, I wasn't a switch hitter. I was a right-handed hitter. So the first time up, I punch out. Second time, punch out. Third time, punch out. And the fourth time, I punch out. This is my first game. And so I'm sitting in my locker, and I have my head down. And Bob Wellman, the manager, comes over. He goes, "What's wrong?" And I went, "You know," I said, "this is what big professional baseball is about." I said, "I think I need to take it back to Sacramento." And he goes, "Trust me, this guy is something special." I said, "I sure hope so." I said, "I have no chance." It was Nolan Ryan. And the right was about as bright as those things. He's throwing these curveballs. I'm getting right-handed. I'm going, bailing out. He's throwing stuff over my head. I'm going, oh, my God. But the guy that I had got some hits off of was Nolan Ryan. In fact, in 80, I got to hit the start of that inning that we beat Houston to go on and play Kansas City in the World Series. But the one guy that I did not like to face, even though it was the end of his career, and the reason I didn't like facing him, because he was very mean. And if you tried to bunt or foul it back, he would scream at you and say, "You better get it down or you'll be wearing it." If you want to call it intimidation, go ahead, but it was Bob Gibson.
I think he knows who was talking about that yesterday.
Bob Gibson was maybe, not only was he a great pitcher, but he was a mean great pitcher. they had an interview after Mike Schmidt hit a home run, and the next time we played it, he drilled Mike Schmidt. They interviewed him. He says, "Was that on purpose?" He says, "No, not at all." He says, "What happens when you're a pitcher is half the plate's yours and half the plate's the hitter. He just has to guess what half he put down."
So we have time for one more question.
Hi, Chuck Gilbert from Chicago. From an insider standpoint, what do you think are some of the greatest differences between the major league shortstops of today and the major league shortstops of 1973?
They got some great shortstops now. There's no doubt about it. You know, the only thing I want to say about baseball today, these athletes are tremendous. They've got great young kids coming up, strong, can run, can hit, great arms, pitchers, they got great command. I do think everyday players really stress hitting. The fundamentals of the game, where to go on a cutoff. Don't make a double play ball. It's not a double play ball. Know the situation. Playing the scoreboard. I don't think, and it's not their fault. You know, let's face it. They're able to say, "Hey, you hit and drive in runs, you're getting paid." My thing on that is, if you guys would spend as much time taking ground balls and listening about the fundamental part of the game as you do in the batting cage, they'd be great players. But there's so much emphasis put on hitting a baseball that the other things, the little things that win games, they go unnoticed. Guys not being able to lay down a bunt. Man on second, no outs, not being able to hit the ball to the right side. When to go to first from first. first to third. You don't go to first to third when you're down eight runs and you get thrown out. These are plays that tend to go over, you know, keep another play in order. How many times you see a base hit at second, they're up by three runs, you got no play at the plate, the guy overshoots the cutoff man, the guy that hits it goes to second base. All these little things lead up to big things. But the athletes, unbelievable athletes. The data they have now, you can sit in a room and you can put up, when Cliff Lee pitches, if I'm facing Cliff Lee, I'll put up all his, who he's pitched against, maybe hitter similar to me, how he got him out, what pitches he used when the count was 2-0, what pitches he used when the count was 3-1. There's so much information now that you should be prepared to play. And the one good thing about playing in Philadelphia, you better be prepared to play, because if you don't do what you're supposed to do, and Pat Quan will attest to this, you will hear about it when you go off the field. They're very good fans. When you do good, it's the greatest place in the world to play. When you do bad, when I say do bad, you know, fundamentally do some stupid things. For instance, you're down four runs, leading off the inning in the ninth inning. I was taught at 9 years old, take a pitch. You got to try to get base running. Maybe he might walk you. I see guys go up there and down four runs in the ninth inning, first pitch, boom, fly ball, line out. These things got to be taught. And to me, I'm not blaming big league people. You got to start that stuff as soon as they put on that uniform, whether it's rookie ball, whether it's A ball, and you got to be consistent with it. You have to be consistent with it. But the athletes, to me, this is a great year, or year to play in. I mean, you got some young phenoms coming up, and Trout, and Harper, and the kid in New York that pitched yesterday, Harvey, Clayton Kershaw. I mean, these guys are unbelievable. This is a great sport. It's a great sport, and to this day, you never know what's going to happen. You can have a last place team play a team that's 20 games over 500, and that guy on the mound and a dictate, that team can beat that team that's in first place. That's why it's such a great game. You know, football, you see a team that's 1-8 playing a team that's 9-0, you got a pretty good idea who's going to win the game. In baseball, you can't figure that out.
Okay, I want to wrap this up by just saying this. I've been a sports writer. My career began in 1976. And there are three managers that had a major influence on me and my writing and my perceptions of the game, because I never played the game higher than the amateur level. And one was Dick Williams, the other was Billy Martin, and the third one is the man sitting here to my left. If I were a general manager right now in Major League Baseball, I would hire this man and I would let him do his thing and be the guy he wants to be rather than trying to pigeonhole into a spot where they want you to be a certain personality and they won't let you do your job or act to your personality. My belief is that if this man were ever given the chance to do that, he would be one of the most superb managers in baseball.
Well, you know, I really appreciate that, Barry. And you know, one thing that I looked at, if I could do something right now, because I watched the game, it would be work in an organization where you are in charge of kids when they first put on that uniform. I think that's the most important time when you get to these kids and you teach them how to play the game, teach them how to play it the right way, teach them what to do on and off the field. And when you get those kids at A ball or low A, and you continue, you have instructors continue to harp on that, you won't have to do all this stuff at the big league level. They will know how to act like a big leader, how to play like a big leader. I watched a game the other day. A guy hits a home run, they're down 10-0, and he's flipping the bat like, we just won the World Series. There's no need for that. You're down 10-1. Well, what, you know, the guy that just got his rear end kick, the pitcher's sitting on the bench, and you're celebrating and make the score 10-1. There's a respect factor. I mean, if you want to go home and do backflips and you hit a home run, that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But to see this when you're getting your rear end kicked, to me, that's no respect for what's going on with your other teammates. They're just little things like that. But you can stop all that as soon as they put that uniform on. You know, when a guy does that in A-ball or minor league in rookie league and he's doing that, he's like, that's not what you do, man. If you win in the game, that's another thing. But when you get your rear end kicked, you have respect for the guy that was pitching that game that didn't get out of the fourth inning, or a guy that's made three errors at shortstop that feels bad about himself. So, But again, it is a great game. I love watching it. I love working for the MLB Network. I'm going to be at the game tonight, and hopefully Phillies are going, they're heading in the wrong direction tonight. But they got a kid tonight by the name of Martin. Yeah, when I was with the Dodgers, I got a chance to see him. He's got a great arm. I don't know if he can do that. I'm sure he can have some butterflies. He's from Atlanta. He's pitching against the Braves, and I'm anxious to see how he does tonight. And before I go, I want to say hi to Will Neiman. Unbelievable baseball man.
Books, by the way, are still available on Amazon. The last I looked, it was like 25 cents in the first book.
All right, thank you.